get started. My name is Patty Giggins. I'm the Executive Director here at Peace Over Violence, and I want to welcome you to our new center. We just moved here in April, and people are still discovering where our new home is. Many of you know that we're a social service and social change agency that deals with sexual, domestic, and violence prevention, and I was just reminded this morning that we actually were one of the first agencies in the country to deal with this issue, and the first in Los Angeles. And our mission is on the wall. It's what we do. I'm really happy that all of you are here, and we're so pleased to be co-hosting this briefing this morning. The title of the briefing is Linking Local Providers with Federal Funding. And our partners in co-hosting is the Family Violence Prevention Fund and Rainbow Services. And the fund, as everyone knows, has long time been a catalyst for many initiatives in our movement to end domestic violence. And today we have with us Sally's over there, Sally Lasker, who's a senior public policy, and she was very instrumental in pulling all of this together. And Rainbow Services was our other co-host, and a longtime partner with us and with many of you. And in fact, currently Rainbow Services and Peace Over Violence we participated in two federal grants together. And Ben Shermer is here, Ben, Executive Director. And Marcy Fucarota, who does a lot of their legal and public policy. And I want to point out POV's policy person. Where's Emily Austin? There's Emily. So the purpose of today is for this briefing about how to access federal funding is made possible by a grant to the Family Violence Prevention Fund from the California Endowment. Linking local providers with federal funding will provide an overview of the federal grants process, and we all know how that can be like this up there, like on the top of the mountain, and how do you get some of those? It can be very challenging. So today, hopefully, we'll get some insights and kind of figure out ways to remove some of those obstacles. It'll also highlight new opportunities in funding through addressing teen dating violence and prevention education. And it's my pleasure and honor to introduce to you someone who doesn't really need a lot of introduction, but we're so excited to have Congresswoman Lucille Wurgel-Alles with us this morning. Congresswoman was elected in 1992. She was the first Mexican-American woman elected to Congress and was the first Latina in U.S. history to be appointed to the House Appropriations Committee. And so those of you who know about policy know that that is an incredibly important committee. She's an influential leader in Washington, D.C., and also locally in L.A. and California. And she serves on the House Appropriations, Labor, Health and Human Services, and Education Committee. As a senior member of the Appropriations Committee and as head of the Health Task Force, we know that she's been busy the last couple of years heading that one up, and also of the involving in the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Congresswoman Wurgel-Alles has been a leader on the health and advancement of women and girls. She's the author of many bills, including the Maximizing Optimal Maternity Services, the MOMS, a grant for the 21st century, the Communities of Color Teen Pregnancy Prevention Act of 2010, and the SAFE Act, the Securities and Financial Empowerment Act, many of you know about it, which helps victims of domestic violence and assault and stalking maintain employment and economic viability. She's a native of Boyle Heights, local. She's dedicated to the issues that affect the lives of Angelenos. Congresswoman Wurgel-Alles is an ally and an advocate and has been an advocate and ally for our issues for her whole career, and she's completely dedicated to improving the lives of women, men, and teens and children. It's a very service population that we're engaged in. It's an honor to have her provide legislative insight. We probably couldn't get a better person to brief us today on the daunting federal process. and its role in providing intervention and prevention services. Please join me in welcoming Congresswoman Lucille Ward Arthur.
Introduction and for hosting this very important briefing in your new home. It's really wonderful, and I'm thrilled that it is located in the 34th Congressional District. It is truly my pleasure to welcome you to today's briefing, because as you know, domestic violence and sexual assault continues to plague our society, and the current recession and the loss of jobs has really exacerbated of that violence throughout the country. Making that reality even more tragic is that the economic and budgetary pressures have limited already very scarce federal and state resources to address this very terrible crisis in our country, and has limited the money that is going to services. And that's why I want to thank the presenters that are here to talk about federal funding, because there, even though there are limited resources, there are ways in which you can word things. There are little tricks that can give you an advantage in being able to get awarded of federal money. So I want to thank the presenters that are here for taking the time to come. I don't know if any came from Washington, D.C., or you came from, maybe you were, we may have been on the same plane.
They probably know the plane.
Right. But I want to thank you for being here, because as you know, this is a very serious issue. And there is a special technique in how you prepare your grant requests that really do help you to get to the top of the list in terms of having a good chance to get that money. One of the good things that is happening is that President Obama has taken the initiative to address this crisis and has proposed record investments in domestic violence services in the fiscal year 2011 budget. And I'm going to just highlight some of the things that he has proposed. The President's proposal doubles the investment in the Sexual Assault Services Program, and it asks for a 7% increase for the Family Violence Prevention and Services Act. To meet the increased volume of incoming crisis calls, the President's budget includes a 43% increase in the National Domestic Violence Hotline. He also proposes a 39% increase for transitional housing and a 22% increase in legal services for victims of family abuse. As you well know, the President's proposed budget increases for these life-saving domestic abuse programs are desperately needed. And it is important that we all work hard to make sure that at least the very minimum that these proposals get into the 2011 appropriation bills. And I can assure you that I and many of my colleagues, especially those of us who are on the Appropriations Committee, will fight very hard to make sure that that happens. Thank you. But I just want to emphasize that to be successful will require your continued support and advocacy. And that is why I am so very, very pleased to see this room so full of advocates, dedicated and determined to end the destructive and inexcusable violence that plagues so many of our nation's families. You truly are the key to our success. So as you participate in today's briefing and plan your strategy for future advocacy, I sincerely hope that you understand the tremendous power that you have, each and every one of you, to influence positive change by sharing with
those of us who develop policy by sharing your personal and collective knowledge and expertise. It is your training and your daily work experiences that provide the critical pieces of information to help members of Congress to develop policies that are meaningful and effective in addressing the abuse that exists in so many of our families. You really are the key. And there are so many times that I have folks come from all over the country and from my district who have taken time off from work, who have had to pay for their own flights and their hotel rooms, and they ask Congresswoman, is it worth it? Does it really make a difference? I mean, we come here, and if you haven't been to Washington, you know, it can be a little bit of a culture shock. And you go to these big buildings, and it's just a very different atmosphere there. And they ask, we don't know if we're making a difference. You know, a lot of times we don't even talk to the member. Most of the time we don't talk to the member. We end up talking to their staff. Well, I'm here to tell you that it truly does make a difference. Because we know, members of Congress know, the sacrifices that are made for all of you to get to Washington, D.C. And so that sends a message in itself about how important the issue is that you are advocating for. So I encourage you, if at all possible, to go to Washington, go through the halls of Congress to advocate and make sure that the budgets that finally go through Congress, at least, as I said earlier, meet the minimum of the president's proposal. I also want to emphasize the fact that now, as you know, Congress is going to be reauthorizing the Violence Against Women's, the Family Violence Prevention Services Act, and the Violence Against Women's Act. And we're going to need your help on that as well. Just because something has already passed does not mean that it will be easily reauthorized. So once again, your active support is going to be critical to make sure that not only that they are authorized, but I feel very, very confident that by working together that we will reauthorize them and improve on them so they can be the most effective and life-changing pieces of legislation that we can possibly have. So towards that end, I truly do look forward to working with you. And Patty mentioned a couple of bills that I've introduced that do I have the time just to highlight them? Because I really need your help on these. And I know to me, particularly the SAFE Act, to me was just a no-brainer. Because as you know, the fact is that very often women return to an abusive situation simply because they don't have the finances, they can't support themselves. And rather than ending up on the street with their children, they go back into their abuser. So it has been, I guess I've introduced, it's been 8 years that I've been trying to pass the SAFE Act, which just shocked me. I never thought that it would take 8 years because it really is a very simple bill. We've worked with businesses, we tried to address all the concerns, and yet we have not been able to pass this bill into law. Now, let me just quickly highlight just some of the key provisions of the SAFE Act. It requires states to provide unemployment benefits when one is terminated from employment due to circumstances stemming from domestic violence or when they need to leave a job to escape the abuse. They're not voluntarily leaving, they have to leave. And they should be able to get unemployment benefits. It prohibits employers or insurance providers from basing hiring or a coverage decision on an individual's history of abuse, which we know happens all the time. And the SAFE Act allows a survivor, without fear of penalty from an employer or a fear of losing her job, to take time off from work to make necessary court appearances, seek legal assistance, and get help with safety planning, which, as you know, can mean the difference between life and death. There is nothing, you know, extraordinary about what this bill does, and yet have not been able to pass it in 8 years. The second bill is the Communities of Color Teenage Pregnancy Prevention Act. And in addition to prevention measures, this bill, for the first time, emphasizes the need to focus on healthy relationships among young men and women as a means to combat teen pregnancy and family abuse. And the bill is actually based on teen pregnancy data, which coincides with the research by the Family Violence Prevention Fund, linking teen dating violence and abuse with higher levels of teenage pregnancy and higher levels of teenage and unplanned pregnancy. So the need to address this serious issue of healthy relationships has also been made evident in a study by Jay Silverman that maybe some of you may have read, and it was published in JAMA. And it found that one in five U.S. teen girls will report experiencing physical or sexual intimate partner violence. So you can see that, and I feel like I'm preaching to the choir, because you know this thing firsthand. But it's just an unbelievable how difficult it has been to pass these bills. And I really hope that you can actively join me in supporting these bills and be a part of the team that will not only pass the SAFE Act, but will also pass the Communities of Color Teenage Pregnancy Prevention Act. I really need your help. It is just, to me, inexcusable that the Prevention Act is also a bill that has been introduced year after year. If you do not have the healthy relationship portion, which I added, but I got that bill from Hilda Solis, who is now the Secretary of Labor. She was introducing that when she was a chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Health Task Force, which I am now the chair of. And so she, over the years, kept introducing that, ran into the same problems. So when I became chair, I got that bill, added the healthy relationships. So again, this is not, even though I just introduced it, this is not a bill that has just been introduced. It's another example of how difficult it is to pass pieces of legislation which are so critically needed, but yet are, you know, for whatever reason, I still don't get. I've been in Congress for 18 years, and I still don't get sometimes why we can't pass bills like this. But I do know that the key is always people like yourself, those of you who are in the trenches, working every single day, who understand firsthand the difficulties and the crises of this issue. You are the key, and you truly do make a difference. And I truly want to tell you how much I admire each and every one of you and what it is that you do, because it is you who give these victims of domestic violence. You help them to be survivors. You give them the hope. You give them the guidance and the strength, which inspires them and gives them the courage to leave their abuser and to take control of their own life, to make it a better and safer place for themselves and their children. Without you, it would not happen. And you're an inspiration to them, and you're an inspiration to me. And I mean that most, most sincerely. And I want to thank you once again for everything that you do every single day. And I also want you to know that in spite of this bleak picture that I painted in terms of how difficult it is to get things done, to get the support for these programs, I do want you to know there are many, many, many members of Congress, not just the women, but we have a lot of male allies who also work with us every single day. And we are making progress. And I think one of the biggest victories that we can look at is not just passing these bills and reauthorizing this Anbawa, but also the fact that the president himself has recognized this crisis and has put these really historic increases into his budget. That's what we were going to focus, and that is where our victory is going to be. And one day, you are all going to call me back. We're going to be in this room, and what we're going to do is be celebrating a major victory, because we are going to put an end, number one, to the acceptance of domestic violence in any form. We're going to put an end to that. We're going to change the way society thinks about it. And we have made strides in that area, but we, as you know, we still have a long way to go. We're going to celebrate the victory over the way society thinks and the victory over this horrible violence. And we're going to do it because of each and every one of you. Thank you very much.
Most of us know the obvious way of trying to help you. But apparently the obvious way is not working. Is there another avenue that you can suggest to us to help this move along?
Now, what do you mean by obvious? Let's start with that.
Contact our particular representatives and ask them to support the bill.
Okay. Well, one of the best ways, of course, is that you contact the representatives in your district, the ones that you vote for. One of the things that members of Congress or any politician understands is that it is the voters who put us into office. You hire us through your vote. We work for you. You pay our salary. You're our employer. We understand that. And where the pressure comes in is when we get large numbers of our constituents, voting constituents, knocking on our doors, on our phone saying, I'm a voter, I've supported you, and I expect you to do this. That has a big, big impact. And the more that you can make that happen, the better it will be. Because very often, and I get lots of folks coming into my district, into my office in Washington, D.C., and a lot of times they're from Maryland, Virginia, and other places like that. And they provide important information, but nevertheless, I'm always going to be calling Pat or Patty or Sally and saying, look, these folks, were in my office. Do you agree with what they are saying and what do you think? You always go back to your district. And I mean, think of it in terms of just like you. You have bosses. You have employers. What is it? To keep your job, to get those raises, so on and so forth, you want to please your employer. You're going to, follow the rules. We're no different than that, in this case, of your arms. So if you kind of keep that in mind, that would help. That would help. But make sure that they're the voters from the district. That has the biggest impact.
If you're a member of any national group, the body is in Washington. Find out about a bill and write to us here in D.C. Our members generate how we put priorities. And those two bills are important. They're not as high as some others. So your job is in nationalization for women, the nurses, the tribal council, the whatever group La Raza, whatever group, Amnesty International, I can name them all, and just say, would you just take a little time to join the coalition working on these? These have been the several of you are actually working on, right, Sally? And offer to get your members to work on it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Now your national organization, too. I'm sorry.
You have to lobby us who work at the national group, because we're overworked and underpaid and
exactly.
But if enough of you say, let's do it, we'll say, all right, we'll squeeze it in.
Your national organizations also have a lot of influence. I was responding in terms of a one-on-one in contacting your elected officials. But absolutely, the national organizations. I introduced the Moms Act just about 2 weeks ago, and the organizations that are supporting that went out in mass at Washington D.C., went to all the offices, and said, "We want you to sponsor that bill." And I'm getting members that I don't even know that well coming to me and saying, "We've gotten a call about your bill from my district, and we're looking at it, and I'm considering co-sponsoring it." So it would be the same thing with the SAFE Act and the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Act. Is when you call, we want you to be a co-sponsor of that bill, because the more co-sponsors I can get on these bills, then I can go to the chair of the appropriate committee and say, "Look, I've got 200 and some members who are co-sponsors of this bill. I need a hearing." It gives me the clout that I need to demand a hearing. Because you have to remember, there are 435 members of Congress all wanting the same thing, and one chairman and one committee. So the more that we can show that we have the support of our membership, plus the outside support of the national groups and the individuals who are calling the various members, then that puts the pressure on and helps me to get a hearing on this bill.
Thank you for being here.
Long time friend. So way back.
Thank you for being here this morning, Olivia Rodriguez with the Domestic Violence Council. I wanted to ask you, is there something that's more effective? Is it the electronic, emails, the letters, the phone calls, or all of the above? Because sometimes I feel like I write an email, I don't know if they're getting it,
They get them.
Okay.
Yeah, we get them. The only thing that sometimes, there's differences of opinion, is on the form letters, where somebody all just has to sign it. Some members don't pay a lot of attention to them because they think that possibly somebody just says, "Oh, well, you signed this." They sign it and they have no idea of what it is they're signing or aren't as committed. When I get those kinds of things, and it depends on also the topic, what it is they're supporting or opposing, I have more tendency to pay a little bit more attention to them, because I represent a district where it's not easy for a lot of the folks that I represent to sit down and write a letter to their congressperson. And they need that kind of help and assistance. So it depends in terms of the form letters. But in terms of the emails and, everybody now has staff people watching those emails and keeping track of what they say.
Is there a contact? I'm sorry, I didn't identify myself. I'm Bernita Walker from Project Peacemakers. Most of them know me, that's why they left. is there contact information for you that we may be able to get some more information about those who represent us?
Sure. Let me introduce you to Taylor Mitchell. Taylor works in my Los Angeles office, so she would be the contact. And
did you see your business card?
Yes, she has her business card. And then I have Debbie, who works in my D.C. office. And the way I have it, I match a staff person here who, in this case, does health issues with the person in Washington. So they work together as a team. So
if you talk to Mitchell, to Taylor, she will get, you know, the information to Debbie. Or what we can do also is you call the LA office on Taylor, and you need to talk directly to the staff person because it has to do with legislation and policy. They can connect you directly to the Washington office, and it would not cost you a lot of money. Yes.
Is the perception, maybe you could enlighten us a little bit on this, that more like in a way that the way the funding gets distributed across the country, that, you know, places, you know, closer to Washington, like sometimes we're out here, hello, West Coast, California.
It's not a perception.
Okay. I'm trying to be a little elegant here.
It's a reality.
She wasn't warm.
Yeah, it is a reality. A reality that has improved since I've been there over the last 18 years, particularly since we now have a speaker from California. But when I first got to Washington 18 years ago, one of the more senior members welcomed me and said, well, I hope you're ready to deal with the ATC syndrome. And I had blank stare. I said, here I am. A member of Congress, I didn't know what he was talking about. And so I said, well, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know what that means. And he said, well, he says, here in Washington is anywhere but California. And the fact is that was a reality. I mean, there are still many in Congress and the administration who think that the country ends at the Mississippi. I mean, that is a reality. And that's why we have so much trouble when there are formulas or when bills are being authorized, why we always have such a struggle, because a lot of times they're designed to meet East Coast needs. And when you try and explain to them that California and Los Angeles in particular is a different animal, it does not exist anywhere else in the country, they just look at you, you know, think, yeah, sure. And that is a reality. In fact, I've had, I can't remember who it was, but it dealt with transportation. He worked for the administration, and then he came to Los Angeles and was working here. And I happened to run into him. And he said to me, he said, you know, Congresswoman, he said, when you were in Washington and you were advocating for transportation money and you were talking about you can't treat L.A. in the same way that you do, you know, New York, Chicago, and South, he said, I just thought that was rhetoric. You know, we hear the arguments all the time from members of Congress why they should be getting more money. He says, and now that I've been here, he says, I know exactly what you're talking about. There is no place like Los Angeles. And I have been in transportation for, I think at that time, he had already been in like 20 years. But they don't get it. They don't get it. And that's why we're constantly fighting and having a struggle. It has improved. But you also have to understand that because our country was started back east, that many of the senior members in Congress, the chairs of committees, particularly in the past, now that has, as I said, this has changed. You know, now we have the George Millers of the world, we have Howard Berman, Henry Waxman. I mean, that has changed, but we're still living with the old rules and regulations that we can start modifying as they come up for authorization. But the way the country was started was all, you know, was all back east. So that is something that, yes, it's a reality. But one thing that is very, very helpful, that is the fact that you have representatives here from the administration, because there are ways to write proposals. In my other life, before I got into college, I worked for nonprofits. I worked in alcohol and drug abuse programs. And we used to have to write grants for federal money.
And one of the tricks was knowing, I also worked in Washington, it was with the Hispanic CPAs, helping Hispanic firms get government grants. And you could have the best, you can tell me how much things have changed, but you could have the best proposal and the best program. But if you didn't use the right buzzword and phrase it the way that they, you know, their new phrases, use the phrases, you probably wouldn't get it. And so that's why it's so important and so valuable that you have representatives here from HHS, from HHS, to help you with that and to help you to understand what it is the administration is looking for in terms of program, how the programs are put together, and how you apply them.
My name is Eve Sheehy. I'm from the LAC Attorney's Office. And first, I want to thank you for your relentless work in this field. I really, it's an honor. But in any event, and I work with Taylor, who's also my friend. But my question is just, a lot of times, legislation on other issues really needs a domestic violence piece. For example, there's the Promise Act on gang issues. And we've worked to try to get them to incorporate a domestic violence piece into that, because a lot of times those things go hard. We've worked with substance abuse and mental health issues. Those also need a domestic violence piece. And general legislation ends up being sort of singly focused. Is there any kind of tip or any kind of information you can give us to help us advocate in that way, to get people to understand it's broader and that these victims and survivors need assistance from these other areas, to get people to include it, particularly if the sponsors are not from L.A. or not even from California?
Who is Bobby Scott? Give me the information, and I'll talk to Bobby about it. There could be several reasons. One may be that he may absolutely agree with that, but because of the committee it has to go through and what the jurisdiction is in a particular committee, he may want to narrow it. Because what happens sometimes, if you put different things into a bill, then it will have to go to two or three committees. And even though it might pass the committee that he's on, which is judiciary, isn't it?
Okay.
So he may be looking to pass this bill into judiciary. But if he adds other stuff, then it's going to have to go through other committees, and then the bill probably will die. So that might be one reason. But if you will talk to Taylor, I will look at it, try and find out what the problem is, and maybe we can accomplish the same thing in another way. Okay. Okay, can I just say one more thing? First of all, I want to say that I'm really pleased that I see men in this audience, because we really need the men to be successful. We need you as allies, and you really are important to our success. So I hope that we can get more men into this. But you know what? This is a reflection also of what happens in Congress anyway. I mean, the reason a lot of these things have happened, all of this, is because of the women in Congress. And since we have increased our numbers in Congress, we have really been able to make a difference. And it isn't sometimes that the men aren't supportive, it's just that they don't think about it. They're off somewhere else. But I'll tell you though, they have really, one of the things that with the Year of the Woman, which happened in 1992, is the year I went to Congress, which is the largest number of women that ever went to Congress. It's night and day.
compared to the way it was in 1992 and the way it is today. When I got, and I'm talking to you, okay? I love how this one story. One story, okay. When I got to Congress in 92, the men, my colleagues, didn't know how to handle or relate to the women at all. And I am not exaggerating. They didn't know how to talk to them. They just didn't know what to do. And on top of that, when some of us would go to vote, the guards at the entrance of the house would stop the women members and say, sorry, staff has to go around. And the leadership at that time would put together task forces dealing with women's issues, of welfare reform, remember that one? And not one woman member would be put on that task force. We had to march to the then leader's office, the speaker's office, and demand that we be included. It was unbelievable. And there's one story that I remember. A couple of women got offended. I saw it a little bit different way, but well, when there's a vote, we all come from our offices and we get into these elevators and you can hardly breathe. And normally, what happens is that the men would say, you know what this vote is and what's the bill and what are you going to do? We're talking business. We would walk in, there would be dead silence, and then pretty soon, in this one incident, this elderly member started shifting, and I knew he was trying to figure a way how to be cordial. And so he turned to one of the women members and said, Mike, don't you look lovely today. Now, she was a little bit insulted that he didn't ask her about it, but it was an effort. He just didn't know that it would have been much better to ask how she was voting on that bill. But let me tell you, there has been a real change and a real educational process that has taken place among our male colleagues. And there are really many who are real strong allies with us and who are now starting to think in terms of, well, how is this going to affect my daughter? That's one of the things you hear about. How's this going to affect my daughter? Because that's one of the things you kept saying. You have to think of it. What about, you have children. What about your daughter? So it is, it's a slow process. But you are all making a real difference. And I just can't thank you enough.